This is the Misdirected Mark Podcast, a podcast about gaming, game mastering, and entertaining you, our listeners. We are explicit, and you have been warned, and I'd like to thank Mike Willer for letting us use his music on our show. Now let's pick up those mics and get on with this thing.
So we're talking about Mentos in role-playing games, the Fresh Maker, right? No, wait a minute. You meant Mementos. Oh God, there's more. Sorry.
Mementos.
Listen, at least we didn't do the show backwards.
We were talking about it. That was a thing that was possibly going to happen.
Right.
Oh man. Hi everybody. What's going on? Welcome to the 359th episode of the Misdirected Mark Podcast, where we're talking about mementos and role-playing games to go to our superset of RPG artifacts or things created through play, the mechanics of play.
In other words, we got our shit called out on the last show and felt like we needed to do another show to make
it. We weren't
fun.
Super clear on our definition at the gate, out of the gate.
See, this is why. This is why it's always important to define your definitions, like define your terms.
Yes.
More specifically than I did apparently last week.
Well, that's okay. So. That's all right. I mean, listen, every time we have a show like that, not every time, but when we have shows like that, sometimes the spinoffs from them are like incredible.
Yeah, that's very true.
Even our failures are magnificent.
Yes. Glorious.
I suppose. Then they lead to things where I try to play the Mentos commercial at the beginning and screw
it
up.
That's legendary, man. That was
legendary. Hi. So I guess we should do one thing. Oh, wait a minute. My name's Chris.
My name's Phil.
I'm Old Man Logan.
So what happens when we don't use the actual intro?
Blew the opening.
Yeah. This is, like I said, this is Mr. Ectomar Podcast. And now we're going to do one thing. So Phil, tell me about one thing that you've been up to this past week.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to change the one that I have on there and push that thing into the later show notes. My one thing is that I got to do the session zero for the Part-Time Gods actual play that Third Eye Games is recording. So the Third Eye Games crew, of which I do project management for those guys, is playing Part-Time Gods. And Todd Crapper, friend of the show, friend of us, is the GM. And so Todd did our session zero. And it's Aloy, Crystal, Carol, and I. And we are making gods in Detroit. And the premise is that something's happened to the previous gods of Detroit, and like we've all just come into our sparks. So much so that Todd made one little modification. None of us have a theology yet.
Ooh, that's cool.
So we are like god babies. So I am,
baby gods, like bassinets and things like that.
Yeah. Like the Muppet Babies.
Muppet Babies.
I was too old for that show. That show never made any sense to me. I know it's like a rage among younger.
It was.
Right. I mean, just like a little bit younger than me. And that show was like the fucking bomb. But for me, like I was just a little too old. It never clicked. Anyway, yeah, we had fun making characters, for the Part-Time Gods 2 system. I have some cool abilities. As the god of cars, I can always summon a car, and I can puppet cars, and I can boost them by placing my divine power upon them. I think it'll be fun. I also took some. I was like, well, I can't just be driving around cars the whole time, so. I have a pair of artifacts for fighting called Ford's gloves. I don't know why Ford needed to like kick some ass with his driving gloves.
Because.
But I do.
I mean, if you then use that, use the lore of that to say that Ford was a god at one point in time.
Ford is the god of cars.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was the original god of cars. Is what we decided.
That's clever.
The other one I have is one of the powers I have. One of the truths I have is armor. My you know, there's like a little phrase that goes with it. So I'm Ford tough, right? Like that's the
– That's funny.
Yeah. Anyway, so he's –
Can you transform into a car?
No, that was not what I took. But I am a what you call it? I'm a Grubhub driver because it gives me an excuse to be in my car like – constantly or whatever car I find
and to not work if you need to not work.
Exactly. Oh, I have a shit ton of free time and zero money.
Like, he's always broke.
I got like 7 free time and 1 monies. So yeah, I'm constantly broke as a god. Anyway, that's my one thing. Chris.
So I had a pretty bad attack of gout. I have gout. It's genetic. And, so it becomes problematic for me at times, and I couldn't walk for like 4 days. So I got this video game called Slay the Spire. And Slay the Spire is a deck-building roguelike where you're dungeon-crawling up the spire trying to get to the top of the third level, and that's a run. And it's a lot of fun, and there's like 3 characters they can pick from. And the map – I love the map because it's not like you walk around on a map. The map is like this hand-drawn sketch thing on a scroll, and it's got symbols on it, and you pick the path that you want to go. And there's usually like between 2 and 4 paths that you can choose, and you start going, and then they crisscross and whatnot. And you're either fighting encounters with minions or mini bosses or the boss, or you're going to shops, or you're resting and deciding if you want to upgrade your cards or heal, or you're going to these random encounters, which could be a fight, but more often than not, they are some sort of like choice that you have to make, like a choose your own adventure thing. There's like 2 to 4 choices that you make. And if you have the right things, it unlocks different options. It's a ton of fun. I really like it a lot. It's actually between that and the epic amount of Magic, the Gathering, the Arena I've been playing lately, I actually have a much better grasp of like how card games work and the mechanics of card games.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. So that's my one thing. I like that game a lot. It's a little pricey on Steam, but it's something I've been looking at for like 3 months buying. So I'm like, well, I'm not doing anything for like 72 hours. I might as well pick this up. And I played like 10 hours of that game because I couldn't walk. So I just sat with my ice pack on one knee, watching TV on one screen on my computer and playing video games on the other with my leg elevated. So that was my one thing. Bob.
Yeah. So I am actually gearing up for the summer of hell. That's what I'm calling it. Mentally, I'm not calling it that. I'm trying to look at it with as much of an optimistic eye as I can. But at work, we have 9 people in the user support department. And at any given time, one of them's on the overnights, so they're not in the office. One of them's on the 4 to 12, so they're not in the office. Another guy works weekends and 4 to 12, so he's only in the office 1 day a week. So there's like, at any given time, the best you can have is 6 of us at once. The one woman in our department, we are unfortunately a giant sausage fest, but the one woman in the department is currently pregnant and getting ready to go out on maternity leave. And she's one of our heaviest hitters for getting work done. Mm. So we're going to lose a huge chunk of completed productivity. And we also are down a person and they're hiring a new person to come in. And that person is going to need to be trained, which means they're not going to be able to do a whole ton right away. And someone else is going to be less productive because they'll be doing training. So then you take all of that and add on the fact that currently I'm helping work on another project outside of user support that supposedly 20% of my time is supposed to be going to. And there's a potential that if things get busy, work could be very unpleasant as far as the amount of stuff we have to do. So, I had a conversation with it about it with my therapist, and we both agreed. I have to try not to go in thinking it's going to be a miserable, terrible time.
Because then it will be.
It's self-fulfilling prophecy. So I'm trying to, you know, like be as optimistic as I can about the different things. Like this new person is supposed to be pretty smart. Fast learner, dedicated, like a lot of things that I'm hoping will translate to them picking this stuff up very quickly and getting up to speed pretty quick. So, looking at it as optimistic as I can, but I have dubbed it for naming purposes because things have names. I've dubbed it the Summer of Hell. So hopefully it turns out to be the summer that was interesting, but not as bad as we thought. That's just a longer name. So that's my one thing.
Oh, let's go into announcements then. I'm going to use this transitions for announcements. Because I like that. That sound effect.
One. Yeah. That's good.
Announcements. So first one, the Bagthulu winner. You want to announce it? Go ahead.
After much consideration and reviewing the pictures that everyone sent in.
By the way, good job, Rob.
Excellent job.
Yes. Yeah, Rob collated them all for us because we're terrible at these things. So Rob did a really nice job of actually putting them all into a Google Doc with links and stuff for us to look at. But after much discussion, after some Rochambeauing, and
I went first every time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still a little sore.
I didn't say I didn't like it. Anyway, that's not true. I'm sadist, not masochist. Anyway, the winner is Matt Bonhoff.
Yay,
Matt.
Matt's, I think we all had different feelings about Matt's thing, but ultimately giving Cthulhu to children is always a good idea.
We're giving it to Matt. What Matt does with it after that is up to him.
Sure. Yeah. That's right. But yes, we did think that Matt's tweet encapsulated the best story. So for this round of Bagthulu giveaway, because we still have another one.
We're going to come up with a different contest.
We'll do another one later.
We're going to come up with a different contest. I got some.
So some we will ideas. Be reaching out to Matt to get his mailing information, mm-hmm. and then we will be mailing him a Bagthulu with dice. And we will be coming. There's going to be actually a Wayward Masquerade is doing a giveaway themselves starting, I think, today or tomorrow. So keep following Wayward Masquerade, and you can mm-hmm. get more cool free stuff from them. And then we're going to have another contest probably next month.
Cool. Any idea what we're doing?
Not yet.
All righty.
I mean, we've done haikus. We've done bags. I don't know what we have left. We'll figure out something.
We'll figure out something.
Maybe we'll look for fan art of Bagthulus. I don't know.
No. That places only certain people into it.
That's true.
We'll come up with something.
I mean, we don't have to judge it on quality. No.
No, by all means, send in your art. We're not judging it on quality. Anyway.
I never judge art on quality. I judge it on hilarity.
Moving on.
Sure, moving on. You want to do this one too?
Sure. Last night, the Streets of Avalon backers received their codes for downloading their PDFs of the book, because that's how far along we are. The digital download is ready. You can get it from if you got your code, and you should have. You can download it right through DriveThru. It goes right into your library, and this way, if we make any updates or add anything to it along the way, you'll get pinged about it. But it was good times sending out all those. I mean, it's actually pretty easy. I'm getting the hang of it now. Like, I got all those mails out, all the mail out pretty quick. But I'm really psyched because sending out the digital downloads marks a milestone in the project. Mm-hmm. It is a late milestone because after this, Tim and I now just have to get the POD files. Tim, John, and I have to get the POD files ready to go. And then there's like a little dance with DriveThru and then books. Like, that's it. So anyway, that's going along smashingly, which means that as that's getting done, we are as a team turning our attention back to the stretch goals.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There was a lot of focus on getting the PDF ready, but now we're ready to get cranking on.
I mean, some of them are already done. One of the stretch goals was the district map.
Yeah.
Yep. That was done already.
Yeah, I haven't released anything else yet.
Yeah, the Blacksmith's Folly? Not the Blacksmith's Folly, the other one.
Nope.
Iron Shoes.
Iron Shoes, that one's done too, right?
Yep.
They're mostly
done. Yeah. They're not laid out.
Edited and ready for layout.
Yeah, that's ready for layout. I don't know. I mean, I don't mind talking about
almost everything's been written.
Yeah. So
actually, I take that back. Everything has been written. Not everything's been developed.
Correct.
Not everything's been edited.
Yeah. So that's where we're at right now.
Yeah. Which means that like we're midway into that, but Matt Morrow's artwork is nearly done, mm-hmm. except for the characters, of which I have poked. All of the Weepos to get me their character descriptions, and those will get done as soon as we get the descriptions. And then, we are really we're close.
Neato. So, in the chat room, people are asking me about some folks are mentioning Andy's Bagthulu that we owe her. I'm just going to hand a Bagthulu with dice in it to the Queenie, and she can hand it over, so it won't be my responsibility anymore.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
that's how that'll work. So there's that. Mm-hmm. We move on to the next one.
Yep.
Cool, Origins is coming. It's like in 2 weeks.
2 weeks now.
What?
But since the way the shows drop,
it'll be a week from when people hear this.
Yes, it'll be a week from when.
In 2 weeks, we're going to have a secret special guest.
Secret special guest.
Secret
folks.
Special guest
or,
next week.
Or 1 week. 1 week if you're listening to some podcast time.
Correct. If you're in the chat room, 2 weeks.
By the way, you might want to check it out if you're listening to some podcast time. Well, what will that date be? That date will be – I have no idea what that date will be.
Four or six, five.
Not 6-5, the week after that, 6-12?
Oh, 6-12 then.
11.
6-11.
6-11.
If you want to check the Twitch stream out to see who our super secret special guest is, you might want to be here for that 8 o'clock Eastern time.
Mm-hmm.
6 o'clock the Queen's time.
Yep.
All right. Cool. So that's that.
Well, okay. So
that's that part.
More,
now we're, let's talk about Origins.
Yes.
So what are you running?
I am running 3 sessions of Hydro Hackers.
Cool.
And to be honest, I have not looked at the site to see if I have players or not. So I don't know. But I'm hoping I do. But I'm running each one of the Hydro Hacker adventures. So coming up short, Busted Main, and the new one, Blue Europa. And I'm just running them once a day. Like they're just boom, 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 once a day. And then opposite of me, Senda's running Turning Point on all 3 days.
Neat.
Yep.
I'm running 2 sessions of Dungeon World, and then I'm running 2 sessions of Sequence using Margaret Morrison's letters. So some pulp punching Nazis in the face action. I'm running 1 a day, except for one day I'm running 2, 1 of each, because the Sequence games are only 2 hours long, but the Dungeon World games are 4. That's what I'm doing. What about you, Bob?
I'm not running anything official.
So if you want to play a game with Bob.
I'm going to be hanging out in a lot of different places, and I'm going to have all my stuff with me. So if anybody wants to play games of Circle of Six, Relic Hunters, hopefully I'll have a new alpha of Battle Bedlam.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Ready to go. Well, 2 weeks?
Maybe.
Crazy.
There's a lot of work.
Wilder things have happened. What else? Yeah, off the top of my head, that's about it. So, yeah.
There's
a lot of
for
in there.
Dead air.
Yeah, dead air.
On the bright side, when it goes to podcast, it'll be cut out because I cut out the dead air.
We have an editor.
Sort of an editor. I sort of edit.
Dead air.
I do some basic editing. Next.
Next.
Let's talk about the talks we're giving.
Yeah. Saturday morning, 10 to 12, Senda and I are giving a talk. We're doing pandas.
Yep.
Like live. Like, so there's no plan for it.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to go into a room and
that's what you do.
Ridiculous. Yeah. That's the one talk I'm giving outside of the big talk. What about you?
I'm doing the design a D&D adventure in an hour.
Mm.
Nice.
And that is on Saturday at 1 because I did a very good job of not putting our stuff at the same times on purpose.
Yeah, good. That's nice. Yeah.
So that happened. If Merwin's around, he'll be there with me. If he's not, I'll be conscripting some other people to come help with this. But it'll be a crowdsourced thing too. Like this is audience participation. And that's what we're doing. And then there's the Saturday night at 8 o'clock, right?
Yeah.
That's the Misdirected Mark Extravaganza.
8 o'clock? 6 o'clock.
Is it 6 o'clock? I can't remember.
No, I'm sorry.
I thought it was from 8 to 10.
You're right.
Pretty sure it was from 8 to 10. Like, we go to dinner first, then we go to do the talk.
Right.
Whoever's doing dinner and whatnot.
Good. Yeah, that's right.
The D&D show's at 1 o'clock, I'm pretty sure. If I remember correctly. I'm pretty sure that's when I scanned it, or placed it. I'll be looking for help, I believe.
Yeah, the talk's 8 to 10.
Well, we'll be doing some sort of stuff. It'll be fun, I imagine. We'll give
our talk.
Yeah,
that thing will be ridiculous.
We'll give. It's mostly for fans of the show.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If you are not a listener to what we do or a fan of the network, then it is not a thing that you should probably come to. But if you're all listening to this, then you should just be there, and you're going to be at Origins. We'll have a good time. There'll be some giveaways. There'll be dice there. There'll be a. Postcards with games in the back of them, and it'll be fun. And we'll have some books too, probably, I would imagine.
Cool.
And then on Thursday night,
yes,
we're going to be at the Eagle, right?
The Eagle.
Thursday night, we are going to be at the Eagle.
I don't think we have many tickets left, though.
Very, very, very few. We are nearly at full capacity. If anyone who is not already on the list, who is not, you know, if you're not on the list or you have not paid and suddenly are like, oh, man, this Eagle thing sounds interesting, you need to talk to Senda. There was a finite number of seats that we had, and we're getting really close to the top number. But you should reach out anyway, just in case.
True.
But for those who made it onto the list, and those who are attending, we are going as a group. We've rented a section of the Eagle, which is known for its fried chicken. We ate there last year before we left town, and we're in absolute love with the place. So it's $20 to get in, and then we're in a private area, mm-hmm. and we have chicken. And mac and cheese and sweet potatoes and a kale salad and something else I can't think of.
You said delicious. You said mac and cheese, right?
I did say mac
and cheese. Did you say cornbread?
Oh, and the skillet cornbread. Cornbread.
Uh-huh.
And some non-alcoholic drinks. And then on top of that, once you're there, if you want to get an alcoholic drink, you can do that on your own. I myself, I forgot until I looked at the menu. But Bob, do you remember the bacon?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes, so bacon.
Probably just going to order like a little thing of bacon at some point.
Uh-huh.
Good stuff. Anyway, it's just going to be our way to kick off the con with close friends, listeners, fellow podcasters, all gathered together and chowing down on some good food on the end of the first night.
Randy Farmer is watching the stream from a bus. That's always fun.
What's nice. It?
Randy Farmer's watching the stream from a bus.
Oh, nice. He's
taking the bus and watching us.
Nice.
Hi, Randy. How's it going? I hope you're feeling well these days. And if you're not buying in for dinner, we have the whole upstairs area rented. So you can stop by after dinner or just to come hang out and have a drink or whatever.
Yeah.
We highly encourage you to do that if you don't buy a ticket.
Like, yeah.
We'll be there hanging out.
Yeah. I mean, and to be clear, like the reason we had to do tickets was there's certain amounts of money we had to reach in order to reserve a room
yeah.
and all that stuff. And so the way we did that was by kind of setting up a finite number of tickets and all that stuff. So if this goes well, and I feel like it's going to, mm-hmm. I feel like we will be doing this again at Origins.
I hope so.
Yeah,
assuming,
me too.
Assuming we go back to Origins.
Assuming the state of Ohio can keep its shit together.
Yeah.
It's true.
Number one reason I'm not going to Origins is if Ohio can't keep its shit together.
Not that we often talk about politics on this show, but please tell if you live in Ohio, please tell your local representatives not to be jerks.
Yes.
We'd appreciate that.
Yep.
Because we'd like to come to your state.
We would like to keep coming to your state and spending money.
Yes, please.
So anyway. All right, moving on.
Last thing, the deal. Tell me about the deal, Bob.
The deal is a live action role playing game. From the Warden, Todd Crapper.
The best name in gaming.
Yes.
Also the Prophet of Probability in our
yep.
illustrious High Court of Misdirected Mark.
Indeed.
From the Kickstarter page, what happens when you merge poker with live-action role-playing? You get The Deal, a high-stakes game of blackmail and confrontation. This is something that Todd's been working on for a while, and he wanted to do a Kickstarter, but he didn't want all the anxiety of the long... the month long wait and the, you know, stretch goals and all those other. So he dropped this in as a 20-day Kickstarter instead of 30s. His ask is $446 Canadian. He's already at 28 backers and $336 with 20 days to go because he just launched it today. So, he wanted to keep the backer tiers light. So you get $1 for just being nice and backing, $10 or more for downloadable print and play version, or order cards after it's ready to go on drive-thru. At $20, you get the physical thing sent, the physical cards for the poker deck sent to you. And those are his levels. $10 and $20
nice.
and the whatever you want if you feel like just throwing some cash at him. So, yeah, I highly recommend you go check it out. Read the blurbs and stuff. It looks like it'll be an interesting, fun game. And, you know, we want this to be successful for Todd because Todd's good peeps.
You know, I wish I could figure out a way to do some sort of crowdfunding thing for editing things like like the story arcs in the Wednesday Evening Podcast All-Stars. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
You totally can do that. That's I've seen people do
I don't need a lot of money, just some amount of
no,
money.
No, but I've seen people do Kickstarters for like a season of a podcast.
Like
I that's mean, what you're doing.
I'd like to do that and then split the work between me and Andy, because I know she would be interested in doing that.
I think that is something that absolutely can be done via Kickstarter.
Yeah, I think so too. I just don't know what the rewards are, right? Like
This is the thing where I think we get sucked into, if I'm going to take a moment to tangent here, mm-hmm. I think we get sucked mm-hmm. into, these things to, we get into this idea that we have to have like a million different things. I think your reward is you get the whole series dumped.
Right to you, right, early.
Well, you get the whole series dumped to you like Netflix, mm-hmm. and everybody else will get it
weekly.
Weekly, yep. Like after it gets dumped.
Seems like the right way to do it.
Yeah.
Right? Because
I just don't know how much to charge people for that. Yeah, I mean, well, audiobooks tend to be like, if you get the Netflix subscription, it's like $12 for a credit.
Yeah.
But if you, a month or $11, yeah, $12 for a credit a month. If you, audiobooks tend to be like $30 to $50, you know, $40, $20 right. bucks sometimes. Depends on how long they are, really.
But I think what you're looking at is how many hours of editing you're talking about. What mm-hmm. are you going to charge per hour of editing, yeah. right? Because you're just going to split that money.
Yep.
Then you need a price level that's going to be – you need to figure out roughly how many people you think you could land, maybe 100 people to back this, right?
I mean, maybe. I would think more like 50.
All right. So 50 people divided by that number and see what that ask is. If it's mm-hmm. if it seems too high – then you may not, you know, then either lower your rate or try to figure out how to get more people and things like that. I think what you don't want to do is I don't think you want to have a ton of stuff going on for it.
No.
Because then after the series is done, then you're still stuck with a whole bunch of shit. But the easy things, the easy tangibles you could give, the adventures, the stats, character sheets, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Possibly make artwork as a stretch goal.
I wouldn't even want to give the adventures because that's extra work, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, it's not a ton of extra work because you already wrote the adventure.
I mean –
oh, but to write it into adventure format. Yeah,
like
right.
we no, don't – between me, Brett, Andy, and Tom, like we don't write adventures like that. We just sort of wing most of the stuff off of a page of notes. Like that is how we play those games.
Yeah. So I simply would do something like this X amount gets you the entire season dumped on day zero.
Yeah. The chat room is all going outtakes.
Outtakes.
Yeah, outtakes are freebies.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Yeah.
So you behind the scenes stuff or whatever. It's like, oh yeah, it's like a behind the scenes DVD release, right?
Yeah, I mean the other one you could do with no editing is you could do little confessionals of just having people after the game record, like open Audacity, like leave, like open a new file in Audacity mm-hmm. After the game, talk about your experience in the game and upload it.
Yeah. Andy, we should talk about this. We could figure this out
and get paid
to edit our stuff.
I definitely think there's a way to do it. And I think you could do it without having like 600 tiers and 50 stretch goals and just go in Luke Crane style, man.
Yeah, like, make it simple. That's what I was thinking about.
Yeah, dirt simple.
Well, that was fun to talk about, even though it should have been in the conversation.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, that's right. We like to go on tangents.
But you know what? It is actually a kind of memento.
It is a kind of memento.
Whoa.
Let us go into that. So
Last time I saw a Segway like that, it had wheels on it.
Oh, why did you talk about the Segway? When you talk about the Segway, you ruin the Segway, Bob.
The first rule of Segway is don't talk about the Segway?
Yes!
The second rule of Segway is we do not talk about Segways.
Yes, that's true.
Workshop! Workshop! Making mementos! Making memories last! Give them to your friends! Yeah! Keep them for yourself! Yeah! Put them up on a shelf! Mementos!
Yeah! Oh! Oh!
Don't suck.
Hi, everybody. So last week we talked about game-generated artifacts, those things that get carried through play that we can hang on to after the game is over, mostly through generated via the game, like the actual mechanics of the game. During that discussion, the chat room brought up the idea of other artifacts that we generate outside of play or during play that are not mechanically based, but nevertheless remain as mementos of the game. So tonight we're going to head into that topic, but before we do, our man, the main man, Lobo, I mean the definition panda, is going to get straight and set up what we're talking about.
Don't be calling me no Wolverine knockoff. Hate Lobo.
I'm not Wolverine. Totally not.
Sorry.
He talks in gibberish, though, like and refers to himself in the third person a lot.
So he's like Deadpool and Wolverine.
Also, is an alien.
Whatever.
And like a bounty hunter.
He's literally... Oh, I'm sorry. So he's a kitchen sink.
And he's also on the show Krypton.
Is he?
Yep.
Interesting.
Ugh, all I'm saying is if somebody showed up at my table with that character sheet, I'd be like, get that shit out of here.
Look.
The broom.
The thing is, anytime Lobo shows up, it's bad for everybody else. Because he's almost... He's pretty much unstoppable.
Well, I mean, it's pretty much a sign the story's going to be bad. Lobo shows up.
That's like saying anytime Wolverine shows up, the story's going to be bad.
Nope, not true. Wolverine's awesome. Wolverine's just awesome. Lobo is trash. Okay. Moving on.
They're not even the same character.
They kind of are.
They're not. There's nothing about them that's the same.
A little bit. Okay.
I disagree.
Fight.
All right. So tonight we're talking about the broader category of game mementos. So let's get down to basics. Mementos. Just as a general definition, an object kept as a reminder or souvenir of a person or event. I think that's great, right? Like I think it makes complete sense.
Sure.
All right. So that's a broad category.
Since I read the definition earlier, I'm just going to say yes.
Yeah. Right. I got it off Google. It must be true.
True.
I could have gotten it off Facebook, but then.
I mean, did you get it from Wikipedia though? And when you got it from Wikipedia, did you reference
just Google,
reference from Wikipedia?
Just Google definition and dictionary.com. All right. Fine. Anyway. So mementos is actually a pretty broad category, and it's a superset of what we were talking about last week.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, we discussed that these things were created through the mechanics of the game, and tonight we're going to expand that to include things that were created outside of this mechanical set that we're talking about of playing.
Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about these mementos, they are items that could have been created before the game, could be created between games, or could be created after the game, right?
Also during the game. We should also
during the game would be that subset, right, that we talked about.
So, no, I mean, the ones you can do ones that don't build from the mechanics.
Correct. Oh, yeah, that's
like,
fine.
Like your note cards.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Okay.
Okay, so let's talk about what mementos do for us. So they're physical representations of memories, hopefully pleasant ones, but not always.
Right.
We know that senses can help recall memories and that our senses about an object can help trigger those memories.
Yeah, right. So like visually, like if we have an art print, an art like that will trigger a memory. It could be auditory, like the sounds of voices in an AP.
Mm-hmm.
It could be touch, right? Like – when I was thinking about this, my Dungeon Master's Guide, when I was a kid, I used to have a real bad habit of writing. Like I would put my paper on top of my book and use my book as a writing surface.
Yeah.
So my Dungeon Master's Guide has like all this, all these lines and stuff, etched into it.
Impressions.
Like embossed into it.
That's neat.
So like my Dungeon Master's Guide has this like real weird, texture to it. That always reminds me of, it just reminds me of being younger and making dungeons.
That's
and stuff.
Actually really neat because it is not a unique book, but it is now unique to you.
Yeah. I scarred it up nicely. And then the last one, it could be smell, right? Like, it's not a thing we normally associate with RPGs, but like for instance, my Player's Handbook, which is circa 1981 or something. I don't know what glue they used in the binding or something, but those old pages and that old glue has a very distinct smell to it.
Mm-hmm.
So any of those things can help trigger a memory.
It's true.
Yeah.
So these mementos, we hold on to them for many reasons, but the core comes down to their ability to crystallize some event and allow us to relive that event when we see the memento or experience the memento based on all the senses that we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
There is also at times the desire to be able to pass a memento to someone else as a gift, which is really cool.
Right. So if those people were part of the same event, then this is like our way to give them something to remember. Like, hey, we all shared this together.
Ange in the chat room just mentioned that for their Farscape Invitational, someone bought everyone action figures and then passed them all out. Now she has that action figure on her desk, mm-hmm. her computer desk. That's a really cool version.
Totally
of
a memento.
Yep.
If we were all part of the event, then giving a memento is a way of, sharing that event going on with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes if a person wasn't part of an event, it can be a way to share, something from, your own personal story or memory with them, by giving it to them. And it's like something of personal value.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like if I was to give –
Well, we'll talk about the cartel picture later.
Oh, yeah. That's a great story. That's a good way to put it. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. All right. So types of mementos. We just brainstormed up a whole bunch. It is not an inclusive list.
There's probably more, but here's at least what we could think of.
Yeah, exactly. All right, go ahead.
Books, like rule books, or even other books, like I don't assume that's in there. Notebooks that you might have kept for that particular game.
Yeah, actually, I used to keep Moleskine notebooks of all my games, mm-hmm. So I definitely have those.
What's another one?
Artwork. So whether you commissioned artwork, it could be something like character portraits or scenes. Mm-hmm. But something that's like art derived from your game, that's definitely a memento.
Bob, are you looking at the show notes?
I am.
Do you want to do the next one?
Yeah, sure. Dice. Dice are a huge memento for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. I know Phil had a set of dice for every game that he played for a while.
Yeah, special dice for a game with meaning attached to, you know, like these dice are the dice I used for this particular game. Custom D6s, a lot of people make those.
I'm pretty sure Jen Adcock had a bunch of custom D6s made for a game that she was running
for multiple
Jerry
games.
And all of those. She's run
a bunch of games where she's done
that's
that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Conventions do it.
Yep.
Right? Like a lot of people collect the convention die.
I used to collect all my Gen Con dice.
Mm-hmm. I still have all my Gen Con dice. I have my, I think the times when QCC's done it, I have my QCC dice. I have breakout dice. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. In-game artifacts, right? I'm not going to hammer on this because if you listened last week, but things like character sheets, play-generated maps, mm-hmm. those kinds of things.
Absolutely. To go off of in-game artifacts just a little bit more, because we talked about last week, but anything too that is not made inside of the game that is that was not part of the mechanics that generated it. Mm-hmm. So people that are sitting around doodling.
Yeah.
Any like your sets of note cards, those always do it for me. Like when you pull out your note cards and start reading your recollections of the game, because they were from your perspective. So then once you do that, I always remember my perspective of those things. And they're generally sort of similar, but I'm like, oh yeah, that is not at all what I was thinking about that. But that's how Corin saw it.
Yeah. And I mean, I often, when I take notes as a player character, I take them not as a player, but I take them as a character. Mm-hmm. So I don't put the things down that I'm not in scenes for. Mm-hmm. And I, especially with Corin, I wrote it as Corin. So like things that were nonsense gibberish, like important plot details, clues and things like that.
Yeah, they weren't really in there.
But like what monster we killed and how much treasure we got, totally in there.
Yep.
Yeah. What's another thing?
Oh, what is it? Oh, pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, hashtag table selfie.
Right?
Yep.
That's a memento. Jerry and Ange do this all the time.
And send them.
And some of us forget.
Sometimes.
Yeah. No, but I mean, like, what I'm saying is
Jerry and Ange always table selfie.
Yeah. Absolutely.
When they don't, it's a surprise.
Yeah. And Jerry does it like at every home game.
Yep.
Like right in the middle of the home game, he just gets up and he's like.
He does it when we're playing board games.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter what game we're playing.
Yeah. But he's got this great collection of mementos of all these like times he went out and played
games
with cool people.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Recordings and streamings.
Yeah. I mean, like absolutely. The Gauntlet has tons of them.
Yeah, absolutely. The Gauntlet collects all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And props.
Yes.
I never really.
Props covers a lot of territory,
never
too.
Often,
a lot of
I have actually done props. I shouldn't say that I haven't. I've done props at the table before.
Props with a P. Got it.
Yes.
Not props like raise it up or give you props, but I'm talking about props like
with a P, not a C.
Props, terrain.
I didn't say crops.
Not crops.
Yeah.
Props. I mean, I suppose you could have a crop as a memento or a.
Sure, you could. X card.
Okay, yeah. Just X card that bad boy right there.
All right, that's fine.
Before we fall down that rabbit hole. I'm not even X carding because of the content. I'm just X carding because where the conversation's going to go.
Sure. Absolutely.
Fair enough. I was just being funny for a little bit. No, props, absolutely.
I always told you if you're gonna veer off, I'm going to lean into it.
I know. Well, that's why X carded us. So we veered a little and leaned a little. That's anyway, props are definitely things like I once made for a Whispering Vault game. We can talk about it. We're going to talk about favorite props anyway. Props are definitely a thing.
Does building sets for games count?
Do you keep it afterwards or do you take it apart?
Props.
If you built – like it is a prop, right? So if you built a set piece encounter, right, mm-hmm. with like a big plateau and a temple and all that stuff, that's a prop. It's not a memento unless – like it's not really a memento unless you – when the game's over, you just take it and put it on your shelf.
That's fair.
Yeah, but if you
break it down and reuse it, the pieces for other stuff or whatever,
I don't think
that it
Yeah. I mean, there's some argument where maybe that kind of is, but that's, I don't think where we're really, I don't think that's the spirit of what we're going for.
Yeah. Okay. The only one that I have that is anywhere near that is I made these handmade Grell out of pipe cleaners and styrofoam balls and foam balls. And I still have them and toothpicks.
Yeah. There you go.
The beaks, break them off, stick them in the.
Yeah. That's a momentum.
They looked adorable. Yeah. And then they tried to kill people and then they weren't as adorable.
Yeah.
They're still adorable. Well, let's talk about our favorite mementos.
I thought we'd just one at a time and
sure.
Go around.
I'm on the first on the list. I don't have any written down, but I have some.
Okay, good.
Yeah, good.
That we've been thinking about. So the AP of the Streets of Avalon is probably my favorite memento. I put a ton of work into editing that thing. So.
Yeah, because that's not actually the game, right? It's the product. Yeah. It's a product from the game.
It is, yes. It is not the game, though. That is cut down greatly. There's none of the side conversations are really in there that are outside of the character, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's very little mechanical or out of character discussion. It's intended to be like an
audio. Did you add some sound effects?
Oh, there's sound effects and music and all kinds of things.
That is definitely a momentum.
Mm-hmm. So, Phil?
The first one I had was an image that I had commissioned. I had Matt Morrow create an image from our cartel. Game we played a small, I think like 3 or 4 session cartel game.
Yep.
And, there was just this awesome scene, where, Jesse's character, the drug cook got, murdered. And I know that's, it's cartel, right? But
yeah,
the scene was great because, it was the domino that knocked over the entire rest of the game.
Like, yep.
When her character died, the next 2 sessions, all hell had broken loose.
Yes. Then a lot of us died.
Yeah. So I had Matt Morrow. I commissioned Matt Morrow to make an image of it. And then I sent it to Mark Diaz Truman with the story about the game, to which I think it is actually still in Mark's office. And it's in the original. The actual ink print is in my – oh, no. I'm sorry. Mark has the ink print. I have a copy of it, which is in a frame in my game room. So if you've been in my game room, the Death of Soledad is up in the corner. And I will just say really quickly, the thing about it is I sent Matt the art order, but I was like, Matt, I can't just send you this art order. I need to send you the story. Like, you need to understand what happened in order for the art order to make sense. And I sent it to him and he's like, Phil, this is the most words I've ever received for an art order. I'm like, I know, but I'm like looking for a thing, right? But like in true Matt Morrow style, like he totally just nailed it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, all right, Bob, tell me about one.
Yeah. So, when we finished our 3-year-long campaign of Iron Heroes in Phil's World of Elhal, it was like a huge milestone. That was like one of the longest games we ever played. The longest for that particular group. And, Phil had plaques made for all of us that listed off the name of the campaign and the titles for all of the sessions. And, his is hanging on the wall in the game room in the basement. I've got mine, tucked away on a shelf somewhere because I don't have any place to put it right yet till I get my own place again. But, it's like, you know, just looking at that, every time I go down and sit down at the table in his basement, I go, oh, yeah, the Elhal campaign. All mm-hmm. right.
I got that idea from Martin Ralya's Star Trek game. They did something very similar. There was an article on Gnome Stew years ago about having end of campaign celebrations.
Mm-hmm.
And I was inspired to make those plaque certificates of the game, and every player got one with their character's name on it and the list of all the adventures.
That was cool.
Chris?
So another one. I mean, those Grell are a great one for me. Like, I still use them. That's why. Like, they don't sit on a shelf or anything like that, but I have them in my minis kit. So, like, whenever I tend to use folks in a maps game, I will pull them out. I had a good time making them. There are some things I wish I still had that I had built, but I don't have anymore. Because they're just too big, right? Like, you can't just leave them around.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? So you can't have a momentum that's like...
Built a Colosseum once.
That's cool.
Out of, there are these tiles that you can clip together. I forget what they're called. They're like, I forget what they were called, but I built a Colosseum and I eventually took a picture of it. I also, like, for some of my final encounters, I've built some pretty nutty stuff. Like pillars and like giant sheets that look like portals and
mm-hmm.
like, I just don't have it anymore.
Did you ever have a, I mean, that's the bridge... the famous bridge battle with the dragon. That was a set piece, right?
Yeah, but that was on a mat.
Oh, okay. Right. It was like, a mat. Okay.
Because so. I had it on one of those flip mats.
Yeah.
So like I could pick everybody up, flip the mat, and then it was the broken bridge with the dragon on it and everything. And then based on where everybody was, I already knew where the dragon was going to be. So then you know, I could deal damage and things like that. But that is not like the final encounter of that campaign arc was stopping the King in Yellow from coming through a portal. But there was already like – there was 16 mini portals, and I built all the portals.
Oh, neat.
Including the giant portal with a dais and all the stuff. Like – and a bunch of the miniatures that went along with that encounter.
That's cool.
But I don't have any of that stuff anymore.
Right. Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, but you do remember it.
I do remember it. I just wish I still had it. You know what? I do have a memento from that game, though, is somebody drew a picture of the party.
Oh, see, that's good.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. Party pictures are awesome.
Yeah, it's around somewhere. It's in my art collection.
I'll tack right onto that because one of my second favorite memento was years after the campaign – when we were toying around with creating El Hall as a setting, I commissioned Matt Morrow to make all the characters and, they are magnificent. Like I had him do the characters and I had him do a couple of, scenery pieces.
Yep.
And they are glorious.
Like, from what? Again?
Sorry. From El Hall.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like I had him do the heroes of El Hall.
That's neat.
Yeah.
And I had him do, two locations. I had him do Cerradome, the temple in Cerradome, and the Kokalan tree village. And man, they're so, I mean, I fucking love Matt, right? So
yeah,
like,
yeah,
they're so badass looking. And I love them. Like, I love that I have those characters. Because it was like the longest, most epic campaign I ever ran, even though it's like a D20 campaign, but whatever.
Yeah.
That's what I was doing then.
Yeah. My longest, most epic campaign. I mean, it's like a tie between the we called it the second. We called it the Second Sons campaign. But like that was that fourth edition game that I ran like 50 sessions of, and the Airy Peaks. Like those two games, man.
I'm getting close to wanting to buy artwork for our Masks game.
That would be fun.
I think it might be fun if we all chipped in and just got our characters for Masks.
Yeah.
Well, your characters. I'm running it.
Yeah.
Anyway, how about you, Bob?
Yeah. So
I almost told this story. Sorry.
You did. That's all right. Earlier we said that that the memories evoked by these mementos are usually good, but not always. and then Phil mentioned his Whispering Vault game. And I had written down before he even mentioned that one of the things that I remember very, very well and actually kind of fondly, sort of, my character, one of the driving forces behind in this game that like bad things happen to you that create your character for this game, short version. And one of the driving factors was my wife and child were killed. And it turned out later in the game that one of the bad guys we were tracking down, Phil decided to use this bad guy as the guy, the creature, whatever, that killed my wife and child. And he made a piece of cardboard. He took a piece of cardboard and he wrote on it that in like red paintish stuff. Red finger paint to make it look like someone wrote in blood so pretty on this piece of cardboard. And then he held it up during the game, and I was like, oh,
that's brutal. I'm like, you run into your house, the door's been busted down to your house.
And this, back in the day, around that time, I had this thing where when I would start to get tweaked, the vein on my head up here on the temple would stand out.
Pretty sure that's a bad thing.
That's a bad thing. Phil got the vein that day. But it was so – it's such an evocative thing. And I remember that game fondly because it was so much fun. It was a terrible moment for my character. But that one prop just stands out as being like a huge moment that I will never forget.
By the way, I still have that piece of cardboard.
Yes, you do.
That's in my game.
And the
That's
out of context memento. Quote for the yeah. night is, Phil got the vein that day. All right. There we go.
Would you X card that, please? Thank you. We don't need to discuss
that
anymore.
Out of quote. Out of context quotes. Chris, you have another one?
I do. I have one more. So on Gnome Stew, I've been writing up the Airy Peaks, which is now a memento. Like it exists in a digital format where I can go and read it. And it's interesting because it's not the same as it was, but I still use a lot of the things and remember a lot of the things from the game that we played by writing mm-hmm. that stuff out. So, strangely enough, blogs and things like that can.
Well, you have maps and stuff for Airy Peaks, and there's a.
So here's the thing: like the maps that Drew, so some of the maps that Drew has drawn, they're not exactly what I they're better than what I envisioned.
Yes.
So there's that. There's more buildings in the town afoot now because Drew put more buildings in there. I'm like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
They don't all have stuff inside of them because I couldn't think of what the point of those extra buildings.
I always assumed there were more buildings in the town than we talked about. There were the important ones in town that we always went to.
I mean, those are people live there or whatever. Like, it's fine.
Right.
But there's also Drew is drawing a map of the inside of the peaks.
Yeah, yeah.
And it looks
sick.
If you've ever seen any of those Castlevania maps, or Metroid maps zoomed out, the side cutaways, it looks like that.
That's awesome.
And nice. It's a slow going process because he's doing it. We're doing that for fun.
Yep.
So there's no pressure or rush on that stuff.
Yeah,
for when Drew is bored, he draws a little bit of that when he's not drawing something else for us. So there you go.
True stuff.
But I love me the blogs after the fact are these neat mementos of me going back and writing the stuff up, remembering what we had done. And now they exist outside of the game mm-hmm. that I can go back and look at whenever I want. They're digitally archived.
Yeah, there you go. So my last one on the list is a set of dice. I have many dice that are special or important, but the first time I really got into this was right when third edition was announced.
Yep.
So third edition was announced. And the summer before third edition came out, the player's handbook was available to look at Origins. It was in a plastic box that you could reach into and you could flip the pages. It was I think it was the printing proof.
Yeah.
So we woke up one morning and Bob and I and a few others were get in the car. We're driving to Origins. Which 6 hours to Columbus.
That's kind of ridiculous.
No hotel rooms. No plans. We're going to see the player's handbook and come home that night.
Is that the most spontaneous thing you've ever done in your life?
That's pretty spontaneous.
One of, yeah.
Yeah. It's before I got really anxious, back when I was younger. So we did. We drove to Origins. We went and saw the player's handbook. Now, I had been reading all the Dragon magazines leading up to it. So,
yeah, so was I.
So we were pretty psyched. We knew we were going to be playing third edition. And it was the most excited I had been for D&D in a long time because I had given up on second edition way before. So while we were at Origins, I went over to Crystal Cast and I bought a set of dice.
Yeah.
I bought a full, D&D set of dice and was like, these will be the dice when we start playing third edition. Mm-hmm. These will be the dice I will use for my character, my half-orc barbarian.
Yep.
And I still have them. We played for a number of years with that campaign.
Yeah.
And we played the campaign straight through for a year and a half, but then we played on and off again. We would bring those characters back, but I still have those dice in a box, and they are Core's dice, and I don't use them for anything else.
Yep.
But they are the dice that kind of got me excited about D&D again.
Yeah.
So they're my keepers.
I did almost the same thing. I don't remember if I bought them that day at Origins or if I bought them later, but I bought a set to basically be the new set for third edition when we got started. So yeah, mm-hmm. that was fun.
All right.
My last thing.
Yes.
Phil ran an amazing, and I still to this day don't know how he pulled it off, but an amazing game of Amber Diceless while he was in college.
While I was failing out of grad school.
While he was failing out of grad school.
That is, by the way, how I ran that amazing game.
And the thing that really stands out about that game was that our friend Jim Namara, he basically taught us all how to play a game where you're turning around and backstabbing everybody and playing the game inside the game. Because the whole while that we were having sessions, he was all, nice and smiles and doing this and stuff. But he was writing notes and emails to Phil outside of the game, and he was doing stuff. And long story short, he ended up basically destroying the universe and remaking it in his image. And when it was all said and done, he printed out and handed us one day to look at a copy of a document that he called Evil, The Chronicles of Ermain the Vile. His character's name was Ermain, and this was all of his notes, his character story from this game. And we started reading this thing bits and pieces and oh my God, you were doing that while we were, oh my God. And it's just this amazing memento.
there were so many times in the game where like something happened to an Elder Amberite or something like that, that later when they read the book, they discovered like Jim orchestrated their murder or something like that.
It was ridiculously amazing.
I know when he betrayed everyone and everybody got mad at you because you were like conspiring behind everyone.
Well, everybody had the option.
Yeah, everybody
was sending things around. Just nobody was working as hard as Jim was.
He really worked.
Like people were sending me like one message or so between games. Jim was sending like 10.
This is what we're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that stands out about that document was we went to Gen Con in 96 and he took a copy of that to Gen Con in 96 with him. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't he get Eric Wujek to sign
it? He did. He got Eric Wujek to sign it.
Eric Wujek was one of the designers.
He was the primary designer.
Primary designer of Amber Diceless. And that was like amazing. So,
all right.
Those are our favorite mementos.
Yeah. So now that we've talked about mementos for a bit, let's take a break. Check in with the chat room.
Chat room.
And when we're done with that, we're going to talk about creating mementos.
But first.
Before the chat room. So Zhang Yu, Panty Hustle. Is that what we're talking about right now?
Oh, wait.
No, Panty Hustle. You should do the straight one, then do the panty one.
All right. So Zhang Yu Hustle trained alongside those fellow students, Eric Farmer and Eli Kurtz, and Zhang Yu Hustle, who are also a stretch goal on Hearts of Wulin, right? Which is kickstarting currently. I think they hit the goal where they're
activated, I think.
Yeah. Activated is what we're calling that now? When you hit stretch goals, activated. That's kind of ridiculous. I like that.
No, you do.
Eric and Eli, they make their kung fu stronger by watching Wuxia films and then discussing how to apply their observations to game design.
Yes.
They just released a new episode not too long ago. I mean, usually you get one from them every 3 weeks, every month. And they're always informative and educational. They're very much a Misdirected Mark show.
Yeah, right?
Love it.
They're definitely a good fit for us.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, you know, I love them. They're great.
I'm still waiting for my John Wick 3 episode.
They should just do a John Wick.
I mean, they could just do John Wick 1, John Wick 2, and then John Wick 3.
Yeah. Like, or just the whole Wick universe, because it is
Wickiverse. I mean, I feel like they could just break that up into three episodes. Because as those movies go on, they get more mythic.
Yeah.
The first one is not nearly as mythic as the third one.
The third one is very much a very much more about the mythology.
Mm-hmm.
Although, again, no spoilers.
Oh, they did a John Wick episode.
Did a John Wick
episode
already?
I forgot about that. Oh. That was a while ago. They need to do another one because there's two more.
They need to now update it, is what you're saying. Yes.
I thought they did a John Wick episode. I thought I remembered listening to it. It was a while ago, though.
Mm-hmm. A John Wick episode.
Anything in the chat room, Bob?
We had a question from Blake Ryan earlier. Does what we're talking about, can you include ideas and concepts from one game that works so you use them in follow-up games?
What do you mean?
As kind of mementos.
I don't know if ideas are mementos.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was a good question.
I'm open to the argument of ideas being mementos, but I don't think they are.
Mementos are a physical representation. When we defined memento, right, we defined memento as an object kept as a reminder or souvenir of a person or
event.
That
is true.
So it has to be an object.
Well, does digital objects work?
Yeah. Digital is an object. I don't, listen, it's 2019. If we start not counting things that are digital as stuff, like we've lost.
Because images are now a lot of digital.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Images are a lot of digital.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Is that it then?
That is it for now.
But let's just—I mean, I don't want to—I don't—I don't want to out of hand disregard Blake's question. So let's just ask the question again, since it's not exactly on spec for Memento. But let's just ask let's just dive into it a little.
The question was: does it include ideas and concepts from one game that work, so you use them in follow up games?
I don't think those are mementos.
Yeah, they're not. They're not mementos. They're certainly things you should totally use, mm-hmm. right? Like I, in fact,
those are things that you just put in your toolbox.
Yeah, in fact, I just today was like, I was figuring out my QCC events and was saying like, oh, I need, I want to run masks, but I was like, oh, I kind of need a thing like the way I run masks for my home group. Is like small events and lots of personal stuff, but that's not exactly how that's going to work for a con game. So I did. I recycled an idea that I had. In fact, I recycled a publication that I had.
Should we be pinning this?
We could pin the idea for a future episode.
Yeah, pin it up.
Pin
ideas
it.
Ideas and stuff from.
Pin it.
Yeah, recycling ideas.
Recycling ideas.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm gonna do a modification of Dangerous Space Jail, mask style.
Yeah.
So, a mysterious floating structure full of villains is going to appear over Halcyon City. on prom night.
Of course, prom night.
It's epic. So, it'll
be, interrupt the enchantment under the sea dance.
Right. Exactly. It's going to be badass. So,
I don't even know what to say about that.
It's going to be awesome. You'll see.
All right. It'll be epic.
I suppose we should get back to it.
Yes. Now. Back to the thing.
We're going to keep talking about mementos. Mm-hmm. I want to break this into two topics. What we can do when we are playing games versus when we are designing games. Let's jump in with the first one. Phil.
Right. When we are playing games, as players, as GMs, how do we make mementos for our game? Right. And should we make mementos for our game? Right. I think we should.
I think it's optional.
I think it's optional, but here's the thing, right? Memories aren't like your memory. I know for me, my memory's not spectacular.
My memory's terrible.
I run a shit ton of games, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't remember all the games I run. Sometimes Bob tells me, he'll be like, oh, remember the time we played that game with that character? And I'm like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, no, like, not.
Which is funny because you would think I would remember less than you.
Yeah, no. Terrible. I got a lot of shit going on in here. I got a lot of shit. I don't hold down a lot of stuff. So anyway, I do think that there is a reason to be creating mementos in your game, because I think that it's important when you go back and look to be able to look back fondly and be like, here are the people I played with. Here's the fun times I had.
Yeah. Caveat, if you're enjoying the game.
Yeah.
If the game's not, like,
fair enough. Yeah, yeah.
Probably don't.
Yeah, if the game sucks, don't take pictures of it or don't do anything extra for it. But I think that in general, like just even a table selfie is a nice, like, quick mm-hmm. reminder. Like, think of Jerry, right? Like, Jerry can look at all those pictures and just be like, look at all the games I played and look at all these people I hung out with and
yeah.
everybody smiling and everything else. So I do think there's a place for it, right? So where can we make this stuff happen? I definitely think table selfies is a place that's an easy start, right? That costs very little, takes very little time. Generate something that you can easily store, right? You can just store those pictures on the cloud.
I think having wanting to have a record or something to trigger your memory about the games that you've played is a perfectly reasonable thing to want to do. Mm-hmm. And creating mementos is a great way to do that. I've just never been that sentimental about certain
things. No, I know you're not.
It takes a lot to make me sentimental about
it.
I know. I mean, there are games that I've run, you know, for 10 to 12 sessions that were really good, but I don't have mementos of them because the ones that I have mementos of are the ones that I've run for like 2 years.
Right. Like I don't have a real memento.
And that's not to say that people shouldn't have them. It's just, I think it's very optional and it depends on the person.
No, I think it's totally optional, right? Like I don't think,
Hence the question of, should we make mementos for our games?
Right.
Yeah.
Optional.
It is optional. I think if you're the kind of person who is sentimental, it's totally worth doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I will say this, even if you're not sentimental, like you don't know if you're going to be in the future. And then you're just going to wind up like, I don't have any of those things anymore.
Yeah, I don't really regret any of that stuff. Like,
it's fine. I am very sentimental. I keep lots of different things.
I feel like if at 39 I'm not sentimental, I might not be sentimental in the next 10 years about certain things. And that's not to say that I'm not sentimental about certain things. It's just not everything.
But yeah, I definitely hold on to things. I try to hold on to the smallest things possible. So, like I do hold on to character sheets from cons.
Mm-hmm.
That's a way I like to be sentimental. I do hold on to table selfies when I remember to take them. I used to do the dice thing, but there was a point where I was churning through so many games, like I couldn't keep up with buying dice. So now I'm pretty much like, I just have a couple special sets of dice.
So here's another interesting thing to say about that for being sentimental about things or keeping mementos for sentimentality. Like I keep very few things to remind me of past games because those are the things that actually matter the most to me.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than having this giant collection that I would have to sift through, but it's cool because there are some people who have photo albums for that particular reason. I'm just not a photo album person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I am pointing this out because there's the breadth of people out there that range from you to me.
Yep. Right. So I think the thing is what you like part of having mementos is what do you want to relive?
Correct.
Right. Like, do you only want to keep mementos for like your like most kick-ass campaigns, or do you want to keep mementos for like every time you hang out and play with people? Right. Like that's definitely a personal choice. Right. Yep. Like that's, I mean, I would say if you are not overly sentimental, that if you wanted to just keep the mementos for your totally kick-ass games,
mm-hmm.
then end of campaign is a perfect time to think about a memento for a game.
Or even just the whatever the campaigns were that you thought were moments that you thought were totally kick-ass.
Yeah. But I mean, like, when you're about to bring like a great campaign to a close, mm-hmm. That's a great time to make a memento.
Absolutely.
Because it's something that you can then share with the group.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm a little sad that I don't have a good memento from our Tales from the Loop game. Like, I have the book, and the book will always be my memento because mm-hmm. I haven't run Tales from the Loop for anyone else. But I don't really have anything that speaks to those three kick-ass kids.
I mean, other than the actual character sheets, which you've kept.
Yeah, I do have those.
You gather all from all the games that we play nowadays. You keep the character sheets for us so that we can't forget to bring our character sheets to a game.
Yes, that's so, like, I am a little sad I don't have one for that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually guilty of it too, right? Like, I'm just happy. I'm like, oh, ended a game. It was a kick-ass game. And I don't think about it. And like, I go on to play the next game. But,
Yeah. I mean, archiving and recording is a thing for people. Mm-hmm. I get that. So how as GMs do we make these things? I think that's the better question.
Yeah.
Like, we've talked about the reasons that you might want to.
Sure.
And the gamut of people that will make these things.
Right.
And the reasons for them.
So I think the easiest one, low-hanging fruit, right, is end of campaign celebration.
Yes, mm-hmm. Whatever that might be.
Right, because I think, first of all, if you actually have a formal ending to your campaign,
mm-hmm.
you should be celebrating. Because I think 80% of all games do not end that way.
Yeah.
So if you have gotten to, we are going to do the epic finale and the 12-ending, you know, Lord of the Rings kind of
– We didn't do that for the Airy Peaks.
We did.
Did we have a party?
We didn't have a party.
Yeah, we didn't have a celebration.
We didn't have a celebration, but we had an actual
Yeah, ending. We had an ending. Yeah. And that's not what I'm talking about. Like, you're talking about the end of campaign celebration. We never did that.
Exactly. I know. I'm a little sad we didn't, right? Because that was another amazing game.
Yeah.
But I think end of campaign, like, if you are heading into an end of campaign, and you don't have to be the GM to do this, I think you could start thinking about, hey, maybe we should do something right now. It's easier than ever to go find an artist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you go on Twitter and just be like, where are my artists at? Like, people will be throwing links at you till the cows come home.
That's
like
true.
Buying a piece of commissioned artwork, among a group is one, not that expensive. If everybody chips in like $20 or something, right?
Yep.
$100 will get you a black and white.
And then you can just copy it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you'll get the digital and then everybody can have a copy of the digital.
Yep.
And finding like decent artists on like social media, really, really easy. I mean, I'll plug Matt Morrow right now. Like, Matt has done those pieces for me in the past and I would do it again. And I just like, I kind of regret that I didn't. So I may go back and fix that at some point. So yeah, I think that's a good one. I think it's an easy one because there's like a reminder, like, oh, we're ending the campaign, i.e. maybe we should do something.
Mm-hmm.
I think the harder one, because I made a list of a couple of these, right, is like when you start a campaign, is there a place? I do actually think there is a place where you could create a memento.
I mean, you can.
Right. I'm saying like we can, right? Like one of the things
this is the difference between you and me.
Well, I don't do this either, but one of the things you could do, like for instance, if you're running a Tales from the Loop game, I could hand every player a composition notebook. You know, the black and white composition notebook
mm-hmm.
costs next to nothing.
I mean, I've seen people do that stuff before, like giving out like a little customized notebooks or a custom character sheet.
Yeah, exactly.
Or like sending out like, here's the custom die that we're going to use for this campaign that will mean something.
There's I saw an artist on Twitter and I'm fairly certain I saved their link, but I can't recall it off the top of my head, who did commissioned character sheets and they are sick. Like, they are sick how awesome, like, detailed and like they fit the theme of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely making that
starting of a campaign, Eidolons are essentially mementos.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
For like I'm saying Eidolons like that means something. I mean, some of you people will recognize that, but we're talking about
Eidolons from Swords Without Master.
Yeah.
Now, for instance, like Rob, when he comes down, like his Swords Without Master kit contains like a cigar box full of D&D miniatures, mm-hmm. but you don't get to keep those.
Yeah.
Like you have to put them back.
Yeah.
But they're an awesome Eidolon because like after you've picked through and you're like, I'm this person.
Yeah. Blake Ryan's got a good one in here. A playlist for 70s and 80s based games. Not even just for 70s and 80s. We had our heist game and Sean Gilgore made playlists for each of the characters based on what the feel
can,
of the
can we stop was. And go back? Because yeah. I need to amend those playlists, those discs to our list of favorite mementos.
Mm-hmm.
Our heist game, every character had their own soundtrack.
Yeah, that's neat.
Yep. And Sean, it took him a little while. Like it took him like a month or two into the game to mix them for every character. But like I still have mine and it kicks ass. Like I love Vic's soundtrack. and I mean, Vic's soundtrack is this like, it's this cool mix of Sinatra, like Rat Pack Sinatra plus like hip hop and it's wild. Anyway, yeah, Sean really outdid himself. Like that was a really cool memento and I still have it. Like I still fondly think of that game and I still have a memento from that game. Yeah. And that uses auditory. That isn't a recording. Mm-hmm. Like it's a playlist. So yeah, absolutely, Blake. Absolutely. That's definitely a thing. Yeah, I think you could start a game. Like if you really wanted to make something special.
Yeah, you absolutely can.
Yeah.
Actually, we'll talk about how you can design that in a little while. Mm-hmm. As a designer publisher.
Right. And then I think that in game, I think it's just remembering to keep stuff. Like not not trash can all of it.
Yeah, your note cards are a perfect example of that.
Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes I keep them.
Mm-hmm.
Past the campaign, sometimes I don't.
You still have the corn ones? Or did you trash them?
I will look because I have a folder for Dungeon World.
You had them for a while.
It's very likely that at the end of the campaign, I took the folder, I put the character sheet, I put the index cards, and then put it away.
I mean, the character sheets are in-game artifacts.
Absolutely. Yeah, because I mean, I had one playbook for Corrin for all 10, what was it, 10 levels or whatever. Like, I had 9 levels.
Secret open to the – tangent time. Secret open to the show, Drew Smith, is blowing up my phone because, one, he sent me the preliminary sketch of the neighborhood map for Avalon. Then he was just decided to remind me that Band of Blades comes out in the next 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Band.
I wonder if we'll be able to get it at Origins.
I mean, if we
– Evil Hat has a booth.
Oh, man. I might have to buy it then.
All right. There you go.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'm done now.
Yeah. So starting a game – so, for instance, starting Band of Blades, like – I'll tell you what I think would be cool. If I was starting a Band of Blade game and I wanted to make a memento to start off the campaign with,
mm-hmm.
I would go and treat some paper to make it all aged. So you can tea soak paper, dry it in an oven, and it gives it this weathered and kind of cracked look. And then I would, you know, distress it a little, like rolling them up or something, and give each player a little sheaf of paper to keep, like, to write letters home or to, you know, keep notes while they're campaigning.
If you're playing like a military style campaign, you can get custom dog tags made.
Interesting. I will say this without knowing or not, because I don't have too many friends who are actively serving. I don't know if that would be disrespectful.
That is a thing you would definitely want
to
look into.
That is a thing. Like I would
not want to do it if it was a disrespectful thing.
Like I get what you're saying and I think that's cool. But also I just don't know if like making custom dog tags is disrespectful to people who are serving or served and things like that. So, but a good idea, just one you'd have to check around. But yeah, you could totally make some like weathered paper to hand out and mm-hmm. be like, this is the big, you know, like write your story in case you don't live. Right? Like that's like, I would like war letters kind of thing. That'd be pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's definitely a thing. The in-game artifacts we talked about. Really, the trick with in-game artifacts is when they're being created to archive them. That's like really the trick.
I mean, like I said, archiving whatever you've made.
Yeah. So and you can't archive everything. So if you did make a cool table like set top piece, you can take a bunch of pictures of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Also, whatever's the best for your memory to trigger your memory.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Like me, I'm very auditory, so anything audio is better for me. But a lot of people don't like being recorded when they're playing games, so
that's true.
I'm not often mm-hmm. allowed to just drop a recorder on the table.
I would not be opposed to it if the promise was it was never going anywhere.
That's a thing.
That would be an interesting thing if depending on the campaign and the people, is to have everybody that's in the game go around and record like a short clip of something from their character, like their character having a conversation with somebody or something, just like a like a get into the head of your character for a couple of minutes and start feeling who they are and just record a little, like, you know, 2 minute, you know, just and yeah. then compile them all together.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That'd be interesting.
I'm going to bring up one other topic before we close out this first question and move on to the next one.
Sure.
I think the harder one is convention one shots. I've seen people do it and give like cool things, like things to hand, like mementos to take. I've seen,
dice. I've seen
custom poker chips,
custom poker chips. Another one.
Like that's if you're savage, worlds. Yeah, custom poker chips, like
any kind of custom Benny.
Right. Yeah. Like if you get to leave a one shot with a custom Benny
paper,
like,
a custom paper mini for the character.
Uh-huh.
It's a neat one.
Yeah. I think that you can go out of your way to make those things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're Jerry and you don't mind parting with some Legos, like you could make little minifigs for the characters That's and let true. People take yeah. them home. Like,
except minifigs are expensive.
I know. But I'm saying if somebody let me go home with a minifig from a game, mm-hmm. like that motherfucker would be up on my shelf. Right? Yeah, like right? I would just be like, this is the minifig at the game I played. Like it was so kick ass. Like I played this character.
Jerry's like, blasphemy.
I mean, that would be the thing where you would actually charge an upcharge at a one yeah. shot. So like go I'm home with and then you just put in the description, go home with Lego minifig.
Yeah. You know, I'm with you. Like that yeah. would, if that said it on the description, yeah, then I would, be I would too. Probably like,
get my Lego minifig.
Yeah. I'd be like, whatever. I'll pay an extra $5.
I mean, I'd totally do that for like a Star Wars game. Like if it was a Star Wars game, I get a little Lego minifig Star Wars.
Yeah,
that'd be great. It's,
exactly.
Especially if it's like a Clone Wars, like we're gonna play a squad of clone troopers.
Yeah, no, we're not giving those heart tokens away, Matt.
What?
Rob's like turning point. You could send people home with some of those heart tokens.
You could make
like,
special ones.
Upcharge them. There you go.
No, but actually, that's a neat idea. Like the neat idea would be to actually buy like an extra bag or two of them and let people take them home. Mm-hmm. Although, what I really would want to do, I don't think we have the time to pull it off, would be to make bigger ones that say Turning Point coming to Kickstarter and then yeah. give those away.
Yeah. Those aren't really mementos. It's marketing. I mean, it's a memento too.
It's both.
It's marketing for us and memento for the
it
people
It can be
who
both.
Yeah. It can be – mementos can actually be marketing things.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, our postcards are essentially that we yeah, give away. Absolutely.
You know what I want to get? I want to get a little thing of Benny's, little disc token things. I want to roll them up in paper – and put mementos on the side of it, like it's a roll of Mentos.
Oh,
and peel it open and hand them out.
Come on.
That's what I think we should do.
That's
wow. Whereas
I wish if I had the lightning thing, I'd play the lightning to shock Bob right now.
I would let you. As much as I hate that in my ear,
I have it on the soundboard anymore.
Can we burn him with the heat gun over there?
I don't have a heat gun. Which,
right there. Jen's got a heat gun.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no, we're not going to burn with a heat gun.
I mean, it's not going to burn him a lot.
I'm not going to burn him at all. There's no,
why does everybody always want to burn me? Moving on.
Well, let's talk about as game designers and publishers, how can we create or help people create mementos?
I think this is so much fucking harder, right? Like this is hard.
I actually think this is easier.
Good. Well, then good. You should start.
It's because procedurally you just tell people what to do and make it part of the game.
Like make a memento at this point. That's cool.
I mean, that's what we talked about last week.
Yes. I mean, like making the map and stuff like that uh-huh. is making a memento.
Also, like if your character sheet, like it is important to like getting an Eidolon. Like
yeah.
that is an important part of the game.
Or ordering the custom dice before the game starts.
That wouldn't as a pub. So as a GM, you could totally do that.
As a publisher, you can just give them the dice as part of the product.
Yeah, like for instance, like you just bought those Forbidden Lands dice.
Yeah,
like they're a fucking memento because you're not going to use them anywhere else.
This is a harder thing to do though. It's more production is what it is for a publisher designer. So from the publishing point of view, what we have done with the box level for Avalon is that right? Like here's a box,
and the problem that
it's
we
got
already
stuff inside of it.
Right, the problem we already know is that. To scale this is tricky.
Yes, because at least for a Kickstarter, right? Like if it was just selling it, we could price it more appropriately. But
right, but you also – so now to lift up the – to pull back the curtain, to do that, you need a fulfillment.
Correct.
Pathway, right? So what you wind up having to do – so let's just talk about the box for a second. So the box in Avalon is a box with curated items mm-hmm. that five backers backed that they will get a copy of the book – plus
other things
in it. But the thing is, so this is why we did five of them. So we had to go buy a box, right? We bought five empty boxes.
Yes.
Then you have to go buy, there's like, I think seven or eight things
now
on your
list. Now I have to gussy up the boxes too, because you can't find boxes. I mean, I couldn't find boxes for a reasonable price.
Yep.
that would have fulfilled what I was looking for.
Yep. And so in production land, you would have a printer print a wrap that goes around the box. I've actually done this in my previous day job. You would get a wrap that goes around the box.
By the way, there's a whole industry out there for engineers that is called packaging engineering. Mm-hmm. Like, uh-huh. This is a job for people that make lots of money.
Actually, one of my friends, I'm pretty sure, Craig, who often is in the chat room, his father-in-law used to do package engineering for pharmaceutical companies.
An old college friend of mine that I played in a brass quintet with, she is a packaging engineer.
It's a fascinating
– There used to be a factory on Walden Avenue in Cheektowaga back – I think it was in Cheektowaga, but it was on Walden. Back in the day, that was a box manufacturer mm-hmm. of all kinds of different –
All right. So let me back up. So there's the box.
Yep.
A box wrapper.
Yep.
Then you got to go buy 8 different things in bulk.
Uh-huh.
Then this is the part, right? So this is the part when I was younger, I didn't understand production. Then there's another step that occurs where somebody
– Has to assemble all that stuff.
Somebody has to put the shit in the box. That's a job.
Mm-hmm.
Then the box has to be closed, wrapped, sealed.
And then shipped.
So
– Now – Doing 5 of them is not that hard.
No, doing 5 of them, like, we could just sit around and get a pizza.
25, you start to be like, oh.
Well, 25 is not even that bad.
But mm-hmm. then you start getting up around 50, 100.
50 is a bunch of work, right? 50 turns into a bit of a job.
100 is like several trips to the post office.
Correct. Or one trip to the post office with multiple people.
Right.
But, like, you're not sticking all those in one vehicle unless you have, like, a van.
Yeah. So
down
this
by
is,
the river. Oh, sorry.
So this is the problem, right? So the idea is that as a publisher, it's cool. Like, for instance, the game that absolutely has fucking mementos jammed into every corner of it is Invisible Sun.
Yes.
Right? So Invisible Sun is like a fucking metric fuck ton of mementos for that game, right? The fucking hand.
Well, the box in its
the
inner
box,
itself.
Right? Right? What did that game go for?
Like hundreds of dollars.
Right. Hundreds. Because, one, they had to make/buy all those parts.
Yep.
And then put that shit together, ship it, right?
It's a prestige format game.
Mm-hmm. But it's memento filled.
Correct. Yep.
So there is a way as a publisher to make games with built-in mementos. It's just that what it means is it's going to cost.
Yeah. I mean, almost any board game is basically a box of mementos.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean
– a lot of people identify – not every game, but certain games, like, they identify a lot with the artwork.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of people love I'm not one of them, but a lot of people love certain boxes of Ascension because of the artwork that is
sure.
that is part of the – that's a deck builder, by
the way. I mean, from a collector's point of view, some people keep games even if they're not currently playing them anymore because they have fond memories associated with the game. Yeah, like I have I have the first edition Pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think it's completely compatible anymore with the expansions.
Probably not.
So, like, I'm probably going to have to get another Pandemic at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to get rid of my
old Pandemic.
No, yeah. Like, that was my first. Like, that was mm-hmm. like my first, like, big boy, you know, board game. So
Jerry in the chat room just said legacy games are essentially mementos. You're making
absolutely.
A memento.
We talked about that. That was part of what we talked about last week, which is because those make in-game changes. And I have heard stories of people taking, like, their Risk Legacy board and putting it in a frame.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not even key, like, because they're not going to play it again in that form. So they just put the board in a frame and stick it up on their wall.
I mean, my Pandemic Season 1 legacy board game is right over there on the board game shelf still. We finished playing it. Like,
yeah.
I can't do anything else with it.
Exactly.
But it's still there on the shelf because it's neat, right? Like, I remember the games of playing it.
Warhammer minis. Hey, Schmitty, I'm with you. You have Warhammer minis. I have a I have a 5-foot long box. Plastic container of Mage Knight.
Yep.
I have Mage Knight. I have figures, terrain, rules, the original dice, the measuring tape. I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I don't know. Maybe we'll play it one day.
So let's go back to our conversation about creating mementos in our games.
Yeah.
So you mentioned something about yearbook pages in our rule books.
So I kind of just thought of this when I was putting the notes together yesterday. I was inspired by Mark Richardson, who has a print copy of Headspace that he has people sign when they – I don't know if he has them sign when they play every game or if he had it like after it published, like people who helped get the game, you know, kickstarted and stuff. Mm-hmm. But like, I got to sign that book, Senda signed that book. But it's like a memento that Mark keeps, but it's his,
it's his copy.
It's the rule book he takes with him.
That's neat.
When he runs. And yeah, I know, what was it? Vincent Baker, did that. I signed a copy of Apocalypse World when he was, running demos in a booth at Gen Con the year Apocalypse World came out and no one knew what PBTA was.
Here's one thing I kind of wish I had now as a memento. Not that I would have thought about it or I had anything for it that would have functioned this way, but like I wish I had a map of the Eyrie Peaks that everyone who's ever played in the Eyrie Peaks had signed.
Oh,
that would be a long list of names.
It would be.
It would be like 100. It would be like over 100 names long.
It would be. I don't know where I would sign.
High halls.
I mean, I could sign in the high halls because that was like my first most core moment ever, but I could have signed on the chain that was holding the floating pyramid where Corrin should have died is a loose term.
Yeah. No, that if there's
he
one
definitely
place that
died.
Corrin should have died, it's there. I mean, there is one place that Corrin did die.
Yes, twice. Yep. Three times Corrin died. But that lightning hand thing, I should have been dead.
Yeah.
Like, I should not have lived.
I would sign the edge of the map because I'm the one that took us away from the peaks when we weren't supposed to leave the peaks.
That's funny.
That was my fault.
Yeah. So I think – so when I said yearbook pages, like as a publisher, you could put extra pages, like blank pages in a rule book.
To have people
like, – and let people sign them. Like make a couple campaign pages.
Mm-hmm.
Like –
that's neat.
Right? Like I never thought of that before, but now I'm kind of thinking like, that's an interesting idea.
Anybody you run this game for, have them sign this book.
Yeah, just, you know, for this campaign, everybody signs this page and there's like –
put their character names in there too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be neat.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That'd be a neat way. Like when
that is a cool way to customize your own book.
Let me tell you from a publication.
And again, you're also saying that people should write in the game book.
I'm okay with that case. not on the Well, listen, by the time – if you write in that book, you keep that book. That's your keeper.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this, right? Like as a publisher, that idea of the yearbook page idea, that is inexpensive.
Yeah, it's very simple.
Adding five extra pages with like a single header on the top of them or something.
In fact, if you know your page count, you can probably do it for free.
Exactly. You could do it for free because you just make sure you know, like, oh, I needed these pages anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to bank Unagi. That. We need to put that one in the bank.
Yep.
That's the thing we need to do.
We mentioned custom dice already. We mentioned in-game artifacts last week.
Yeah, but in-game artifacts, I'm thinking like Invisible Sun.
Oh yeah, also like anything like Cthulhu with the handouts and things like that.
Yeah.
Because those are neat to have.
What's the one? Is it Oriental Express that has
the
like
Orient the, Express?
Yeah, the Orient Express has Horror like 500 Express. Like handouts or something. In fact, there was a Kickstarter. Isn't there a Kickstarter for like just handouts?
Yeah, there has been. For Masks of Nyarlathotep. There was a Kickstarter for just the handouts.
Just the handouts.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you, like if I played Invisible Sun when I was done, I would put that hand thing on a shelf.
Next to the box. Or put the hand on top of the box.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The black hand. The hand coming out of the
box. I tell you where it wouldn't be. I wouldn't leave it in the box.
No.
That hand thing would be out somewhere. You'd be like, oh, you played Invisible Sun? Be like, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Absolutely.
Like I have a D&D Beholder and a Mind Flayer always out.
Mm-hmm.
They're displayed because I use them all the time and they're two of my favorite minis.
Oh, I have a the end of my Elhal campaign. I needed a mini for the Demon King, and I went and found a D&D mini, like a big ass D&D mini for the Demon King. I still have that guy.
Nice.
Yeah, like I still have the Demon King somewhere. He's roaming around. Yeah.
All right, so that's that. That's our topic then, right?
That is our topic.
Yeah.
In summary, I think artifacts and mementos or whatever are cool.
I think they're cool too. I think that like you said earlier, it's a personal preference to how sentimental you want to be about something. It is also a function of how much space can you afford to keep stuff in.
Like, and you know, how you want to keep your stuff.
And how you want to keep your stuff, which is why I would strongly advocate if you are feeling sentimental, but for any reason you either don't have a lot of money to buy extra stuff for games or don't have a lot of space. Digital, man. Yeah. Digital.
Hashtag table selfies folder.
Yeah, really. Just take a picture, upload it to Google Drive.
That's almost as good as your campaign journal thing that you're talking about with the yearbook.
Yearbook pages. I mean, I mean, you can just take the inside cover of a book and do the yearbook.
You
page.
Can.
Like, you don't need
how
extra
often,
pages.
Honestly, how often do you get a game book that has, like, a blank page in the front or the back?
Almost always.
Like, almost always.
Especially if it's POV.
So here's the thing. You're always going to have that argument, though, between the people who want to write in their book and who don't want to write
in their
book.
That's true.
But if you do what Phil said, which you create a dedicated space to say, it's okay to write in this book here, then that's different. Like, people's minds will click on that.
You throw a little header on top of that page that says something like, you know, like campaign thing or whatever. Or
here's the thing here's the thing where I'm transforming, right? Before I was a publisher, books were the creation of books was an arcane and mysterious thing to me, where I was like, I don't know how this book came to be. We must cherish it forever and all through the ages. But like now as a publisher, like I'm like, nah, I can order another one on DriveThru.
Yeah, you know how a sausage is made, so.
Like, these things only retailed for, like, $3. Like, you can go ahead and write in one. Like, it's no big deal. I mean, seriously, like, when Hydro Hackers comes out, I probably will do the yearbook thing and have a whole bunch of people sign
it's
it.
Just gonna shake
and then
my
I
head.
Will just, like, throw it up on a shelf and have another
shake
copy.
Shake my head. Shake my head.
My thing with marking up books is an extension of wanting to keep the book in good shape. I honestly am not, like, if I have authors sign the book or people like that, like, I'm cool with that. My big thing is like, I don't want to set my book down on a table or like, oh, there's puddle of water there from somebody's beverage.
Yeah. I don't want to ruin my book either.
Yeah. Or like, oh, somebody knocks my book off the table and it bangs in one of the corners and the corner's all jacked up and like stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't
and
like that
just
either.
Kind of like, it's my brain just kind of extended that out. They're like, ah, why are you done here in the page? Why are you highlighting?
I don't like when people, like when Chris highlights the inside of a book, I'm like, nah. But,
I mean, they're reference books.
No, I'm with you. You're not wrong. No, it's you're just not like, wrong. It makes me, I don't know, it makes me twitchy. But like you said, if I granted somebody space in a book, because the truth is, I'm probably not going to sell my game books at this point. Like, I'm probably going to keep the ones I have because, I either wanted the game for some reason or I've played the game and – I mean I have a physical copy of pretty much every game I've ever run.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I don't use the physical copy when I'm actually running the game, I have a physical copy of the book, except for Masks, which I'm rectifying when I get to Origins. I'm going to just run to IPR and get myself a copy of Masks. Anyway, we're about ready to head out of this section and head into the
conversation.
Is there anything left in the chat room?
We just got a couple of people talking about, you know, their how they treat books. Like Schmitty says, water damage annoys him, but he likes to have some wear and tear on a book.
Yeah, I get that.
Rob Day is fine with people signing a book if he's planning on making it a memento.
Yes. I mean, if you don't like if the yearbook page is in there and you're like, I don't want this to be a memento, don't.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't use it.
And Jerry marks the hell out of his books. He has some books that he wrote conversions right in.
That's a thing. Yeah. All right, here we go. Next thing.
Next thing.
Sub-conversation corner.
Yeah.
We're going to do this for like 10 minutes, then we're going to go to the after show.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we actually have an after show. Bob, tell me about your whatever you want to talk about. What do you want to talk about, Bob?
Yeah, so first thing I want to say is our Masks game has delivered again. We had a really, really good session Sunday. Tony had some amazing moments. The interactions between Tony's character and the goth girl that he's involved with. Just like ridiculously fun.
Oh, it's fun.
No, like, all right. So
he took it. He went a place that we didn't actually expect him to go.
I had an index card.
This is my shocked.
Well, uh-huh. No. I had an index card from the previous session where I wrote a note like on the next 6- for him. She calls him and says she's harmed herself to get him to come over and be a superhero and save her.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I thought this relationship was going, right? Like, I thought this relationship was going into, like, full-on teen tragedy.
Yeah.
And then we're playing this scene where he's having this serious conversation with her, and all of a sudden he's like, you're the person who grounds me. Like, I am dealing with powers that I can't even completely understand that are shaping reality, but you're the person that still makes me feel human and feel grounded. And I'm like,
I think about you a lot.
I like just crossed that thing out of my notes. Yeah. I was like, well, we're not doing that now. Like,
he's like, yeah. Oh, by the way, I'm Collider. He like drops his superhero name and he lets the cat out of the bag.
The thing about Tony is that when you think you have him figured out, like,
you don't have him figured out.
He doubles back. And yep. It's not like he reads the table and is like, oh, I'm going to be unpredictable. He's just playing.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't come in with an agenda. He just starts playing the game.
And yeah, I know.
It was fantastic.
Good time.
Really thought I was going to have
the sign of a good rainmaker. Which, by the way, maybe that should be a show topic.
It should be. It was already a Gnome Stew topic, but we could do it as a. And I think it was actually a Pandas topic as well. All hail the rainmaker. You want to
have a show about rainmakers?
Yeah, put it on there. Why not? Everybody who listens to Pandas listens to this show, so we can totally.
Ding.
But yeah.
Yeah, that game.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, that game was a lot of fun. We ended up in a combat. With a juiced up, quasi superhero, baseball team. The high school baseball team had gotten powers.
Really?
Yes.
That's funny.
And my character literally has no powers. I'm a legacy and all I have is like acrobatics and.
He's Batman.
And I'm essentially Batman.
Yeah, you have
to
powers.
A certain degree.
You're a ninja.
But not like superpowers. And these guys are all like, oh, you're in over your head now. And I kept like, making moves and rolling well and stuff and like totally deflating their plans for how they were going to kick the crap out of me. Mm-hmm. It was glorious.
Nothing like beating on the bullies, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, the longer story, which, actually they don't know, but the team had through a supervillain. One of the pitcher's sister was a supervillain.
Mm-hmm.
She got them hooked up with the stuff called Cypher, which unlocks potential in your DNA. And they were doing small time robberies and stuff.
Knocking over gas stations and stuff?
They were stealing Xboxes
Xbox games and clothing from
stores and stuff like that. Like they were sneaking in using her powers and then stealing stuff.
Yeah.
But I essentially, for stat purposes, I just had two characters for that game, the infield and the outfield. And just gave them gave them like, you know, a couple of conditions each and some moves.
Nice.
Yeah.
Like ended up winning. That's good.
Double play was one of their moves.
Yeah,
of course.
The other thing I wanted to mention was I didn't do a hell of a lot over this holiday weekend. I was feeling kind of like just wiped out. I was just like tired all day, especially Monday. I was just tired, kind of dragging. So most of the weekend I watched a ton of TV. But I didn't watch anything new. Like, I should be watching, like, season 2 of Runaways on Hulu. Or I should be watching, you know, catching up on The Orville because I started watching season 1 of that, like, a year ago.
Which is supposedly a really good show.
Pretty good. Different stuff like that. I kept watching stuff that I've already seen, like watching movies that I've already seen or episodes of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. And, like, I didn't watch anything new. But I watched a ton of TV.
All I did was
watch The Winter Soldier again, like just like all that stuff. So
that's comfort food.
Yeah, exactly.
That's comfort food for the mind.
Exactly what it was.
Yeah. All I watched was new stuff, except for Baby Driver. I watched that again. Man, that movie's so good. It's totally a B+.
Tell us what else.
I mean, I watched Arrow and Flash all their new seasons because you know I had nothing to do for 3 days because I couldn't move. I mean, season 5 of The Flash is probably the best season of The Flash so far. It might be the best season of a CW show so far. So of the superhero ones. So it's really good. I won't spoil anything. It's on Netflix right now. It's 22 episodes long. It's great. There's a wonderful episode where King Shark fights Gorilla Grodd.
Uh-huh.
When I say it's the best season of the CW show stuff, it is the most comic book.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
The Flash is essentially a four-color comic on TV. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. It is sometimes cheesy like you would expect from a four-color comic. Some of the action sequences, you're like, well, they didn't pull that off quite right. But it's got all the drama that you would expect from a comic book and all the superheroics that you would expect from a comic book.
Yep. That sounds awesome.
And because of the special effects, they have them so well down now, they probably don't cost a lot to do anymore. So they look good enough.
Or the show's doing well enough that they've amped up the budget.
Sure. I mean, they could be that too. But
you're seeing an uptick in effects.
The effects look pretty much the same to me. Like when Flash is running.
They're always the same.
He's in slow-mo and everything else around him.
This is stuff that they've gotten nailed down for a long period of time.
They've been doing it so long that it's just like, okay, it's cool, you know.
And they're using the same sets that they were using a lot of times from like season 1.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like they've had to spend a lot of money on new stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe a new costume design or whatever, but it's good. I mean, I feel like they're spending their money on actors.
Yeah.
Because they have huge casts. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that the way that this works is they have this money for all those CW shows. So they just spread out the money over the course of all of those shows to for whatever they need.
Would not surprise me.
Because they have tons of cast members for all of these shows now. It's kind of
they've been expansive. Super ambitious too, like the crossover stuff that they've been doing. And they're getting ready this fall to do Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah, which I'm looking forward to because I'm a DC fan and Crisis is a really cool story. And they can pull in – they have a Superman, so they can use a Superman. But they're not going to. They're going to use Supergirl, Flash, and Arrow as their three.
That's their trinity, yeah.
Yeah, that's their trinity.
In fact, on Legends, they actually called them the Trinity.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. Yeah. Phil, would you tell me about the Excellence of Tyranny before we go to the Patreon?
The Tyranny of Excellence.
Tyranny of Excellence.
The Tyranny of Excellence was an article that popped up. I don't have the link on me, but I posted it out on Twitter. It's really interesting. It was talking about how the story games community isn't always the most welcoming community, that this kind of strive to be more excellent, more innovative, more, I don't know, designer kind of thing is kind of, you know, kind of killed the camaraderie, like from like the general hobby.
You don't say, it turned into the Forge. Weird.
Yeah. Right.
Sorry. Hey, everybody. What's up? Strong opinion.
I'll say this. Like, the Forge was about arguing, right? Like,
this is about nicer arguing?
No. Like, the Forge was a forum. So, its format was, like, deep fucking discussions, mm-hmm. right? Like, post after post after post of arguments, debates, and things like that. Not saying it was good. I'm just saying, like, it was lengthy, right? But this is, like, mostly Twitter. So, there's, like, you know, the occasional tweet rant. And like, you know, a handful of tweets. But I was having a lot of problems over the last couple of months feeling kind of alienated in terms of the story game community.
What community?
Well, story game section of the hobby. And I realized the Tyranny of Excellence thing kind of summed up a lot of what I was feeling. Like, I don't feel super connected to anything outside of our Mr. Ector Mark community.
Mm-hmm.
And designer wise, I don't really feel super connected to any other designers other than us. Like, we have friends who are designers. But I don't know. There's like a weird, there's a weird thing. Like, we don't connect and collaborate as a whole group. Like, we connect and collaborate in little pockets and places. But anyway, it led to a lot more discussion. Like, I just had a lot of
an interesting thought because – no, go ahead. Keep going. Sorry.
But I had – like, I realized what was happening to me for a while was I was having a lot of negative reactions to wanting to be accepted in mm-hmm. places, like obsessive kind of like all the things that my anxiety turns negative. So – things about being compulsive and anxious and things like that. And, you know, I read that article and I was like, huh, I think this is what I'm struggling with. And so I have been over the last couple of the last week, I've laid off of going to other communities. I've kind of, I'm kind of slowly reevaluating like why I'm part of certain groups. Like, what am I doing here? Am I trying to get praise for things that I make? Because I'll tell you what, praise in that community is hard to get. It's not an easy thing to get. And, if you're looking for it or if you crave it or want it, like, it's, you know, you'll starve. You'll starve more than you'll get it. Like, big name people get all sorts of recognition. Within pockets, within cliques, people like, you know, like support within their own little cliques. But it's tough. I'm a little jaded right now. Right. And I'm just kind of looking. I'm kind of looking at where I want to put my focus.
It's interesting. I've never sought validation from anyone in the greater games community for my design.
Yeah. I mean, I did.
And it's fine. I mean,
that's what I wanted.
I don't know if that's necessarily the right way to go about it.
I don't know. I think I lost track for a little while of just wanting to make my own little weird games. Like, I mean, here's the truth, right? So if we're just going to be upfront, right? I make a lot of money. My day job, right? Mm-hmm. I make a lot of money. I have the economic privilege of not having to live on the money I make from publishing, which allows me to just go and make whatever the hell I want. It doesn't have to sell. I can sink money into it. I don't like to. I mean, my personal goal is not to is not to spend money on something that isn't going to make money. But I can just like go do my thing. And I don't have to get anybody's praise. If 10 people buy a thing and like it, I don't know. Is that a success? If it's one person's favorite game, is that a success?
Depends on what your definition of success is.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to reevaluate. I'm trying to reevaluate what that means. Like, what is, like, what does that mean? Like, do I need a, you know, do I need another any?
It's funny. To me, success was, oh, look, we sold a game.
Yeah,
like,
well.
Not a copy of a game, but the other thing that we did that we can't talk about.
Yes, like that thing that we can't
talk about. Like, that's success to me. Like.
Yeah. Avi's asking who else was tweeting this. Oh, Avi, if you look for my post on it, like there were a whole host of people. Hamish retweeted that article. Jason Pitt retweeted that article. It was on it got retweeted a couple times on Facebook by, I think, Kate Bullock and a few other people. Like a number of people retweeted that Tyranny of Excellence article. And you'll find my tweet about it because I had like a tweet and a couple posts after it.
We are going to go to our Patreon shoutouts and get to the to the outro.
Wait,
and then we'll talk about more of this in the after
show. I was going to say, wait to let me bring down the end of the show.
No, that's okay. Well, we're going to talk, if you want to hear more of this discussion, we're going to talk about it in the after show.
Yep.
Patreon shoutouts, Scott Ryder, Joseph Peralta, Andrew Dempsey, Thomas Bagley, Richard Ruane, JT Evans, Jared Rasher, T. Kustik, Daniel Thomas, Stephen Farrell, Jen Pixelscapes, Gagne, Curtis Y. Takahashi, Noah Bond, Remy Bilodeau, Glenn Seiler, Austin Lemke, Drew Smith, Robert Aducci, Jeff Stevens, MT Black, and The Closet Gamer.
All right. I looked at the damn freaking show notes and I saw chat room for life there and I went, wait a minute. Hey, thank you everyone for listening.
If you are free Tuesday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. the Queen's time, you're welcome. Come join us live on Twitch where you can chat with other listeners in our awesome chat room for life and ask us the occasional question.
So what voice should I do this in? Should I do radio announcer? Should I
do the nice chill?
If you can't make it to the live show, check out our podcast each week wherever you get your podcasts. Also, take a listen to some of the other shows in the Misdirected Mark Network, such as Down with D&D, Bone, Stone, and Obsidian, Panda's Talking Games, Cypher Speak with Darcy and Troy, The Gnome Cast, The Wednesday Evening Podcast All-Stars, Zhang Yu Panty Hustle, She's a Super Geek, and The Bonus Experience, which is on hiatus right now. You can and should also check out our sibling podcasts, Tabletop Bellhop, where you can get all of your board gaming and role-playing game reviews,
Ding.
The Knights of the Night, where you can get amazingly good long-form actual play, and the always amazing Gaming MBS for more information like Misdirected Mark.
Choo-choo.
You do realize that Mellow does not require whispering.
Did I whisper?
Yeah, a little bit. Whispering.
Okay.
You were kind of going a little Venus flytrap on that.
Venus flytrap.
Oh, man.
After you have all signed the campaign yearbook and are ready to pack up your campaign, leave us some feedback. You can reach us directly via email, mmp@misdirectedmark.com. Check out our Facebook group. Hit us up on Twitter. Real quick, the Twitter roundup. The show and the network is at Misdirected Mark. That guy over there is Robert M. Everson. This guy, The Light 101, and I am your host, DNA Phil.
You are, in fact.
I'm one of your hosts.
You DNA are one Phil. Of the hosts.
Yay. Hey, if you like what we do here and on the other shows in the Misdirected Mark Network, you can and should support our Patreon campaigns, please. MMP Down with D&D and Pandas Talking Games are at patreon.com/MMP. She's a Super Geek is at patreon.com/SassGeek. Zhengu Hustle is at patreon.com/... Misdirected Mark, word scramble, Zhang Yu Hustle. And last but certainly not least, bonus experiences at patreon.com/bonus experience. Patrons of MMP Down with D&D and Pandas Talking Games get access to the after show, the pre-production show notes, musical parodies, maybe, the Pandas Talking Games bonus outtakes, and other special releases.
This has been a Misdirected Mark production, the media arm of Encoded Designs, trying for a bit more of a not whispery weird ASMR out. Mic drop.
Gonna use my good arm tonight. We out.